In our study of Sugyas of Shas, certain issues seem to come up over and over and over again. And if we learn those issues, then it will give us tools to, I think, break open some of the tough nuts in Shas, some of the tough Sugyas. And for a long time, I've been excited about this possibility of learning the Derech HaLimud, the methodology that underlies Sugyas and Shas. What we want to study today is Bitul versus Talui V'Omed, which means, Bitul means nullification, completely nulling and voiding the mitzvah, the chiyuv. Or is it just what I call a temporary blockage? Meaning, the force here is not strong enough to completely undermine and vitiate the obligation. The obligation still remains, shall we say, in the shadows, waiting to jump at us. But there's something that's blocking it, that's preventing it from coming to the fore. So, for example, when we talk about mitzvos, and Ruby's from Boston, so I can talk about the Rav. You know, the Rav used to always speak about the fact that there's a chiyuv and a kiyum. In other words, there's the obligation, otherwise known as the chovas gavra, and then there's the kiyum mitzvah, there's implementing the mitzvah and obtaining its successful implementation. So sometimes when you have a force that disqualifies a mitzvah, what it says is that forget about the chiyuv. The chiyuv is completely gone. That's what I call nullification. Or in another term, you can call it bitul or akira. Akira means to be okir, min ha-shorish. We don't have any dentists here, I don't think, today. But a dentist tries to, you know, get down to the root of things. And in this case, we would try to undermine and completely nullify the root itself, the chiyuv itself. Other times, no. The chiyuv is there. It sort of lingers. But the chiyuv cannot express itself in a kiyum, because there's something blocking between the chiyuv and the kiyum. So all this sounds very abstract. And Amir Tzashem, what we're going to try to do is flesh it out with actual sugyas. The first sugya we want to cover is a sugya Masechta Shavuos. And that sugya is called Ein Shvua Chala Al Shvua. Meaning you cannot repeat an oath twice. Once the first oath is binding, the Shvua is Chal, you cannot repeat that oath and impose a second Shvua which is identical to the first Shvua. And the Gemara applies this rule to any case of someone who takes an oath to fulfill a mitzvah, or on the flip side, to violate a law in the Torah. And that's called Mushba V'Yomid Me'ar Sinai. Which means that all of us at our Sinai, each and every one of us, took a Shvua. And that oath is binding throughout all the generations. If I were to take an oath today, which would basically reiterate the oath that I already accepted upon myself at our Sinai, that oath would be meaningless. Well, I'm going pretty far when I say meaningless, because that's going to be the issue at stake. Is it meaningless or is it not? So if you're looking at your Mar Makomos page, take a look on the left side of the first page, and you'll see the following discussion, which is between the Shach and the Prima Gadol. The case is where a person actually took upon himself a Shvua, an oath, Shelo Yochal Nevela, then he won't eat a nevela. Now, right away we can apply the principle of Mushba V'Omid Me'ar Sinai. The second Shvua that you took today is basically an identical repetition of the Shvua that you took many thousands of years ago at the time of Har Sinai, that you won't eat nevela. So you're already Mushba V'Omid Me'ar Sinai. Now your Shvua cannot be Chal because of the principle of Ein Shvua Chal Al Shvua. So far, so good. What happens though, if something comes along, a situation arises which will remove the original Shvua at Har Sinai? That sounds a little bit odd and very extreme. But what I mean to say is, let's say we have circumstances that all of a sudden arise which allow you to eat nevela. What would be a classical case of permission to override the lav of Nevela or any other lav in the Torah? Why would we feed someone Nevela deliberately? And the answer is Pikuach Nefesh, V'chai b'hem v'lo shiyomus b'hem. So if a chole would now have to eat, and the doctor prescribes him eating Nevela, or that's the only food that's available, the original Shvuat Har Sinai now is no longer binding. Because on the contrary, that Shvu is now alleviated by virtue of Pikuach Nefesh. The question arises, what happens with the Shvu that I took today that I won't eat Nevela? Now that I'm allowed to eat Nevela because of the principle of Achai Bohem, of Pikuach Nefesh, now we've removed the original Shvuah, and in the present mode, we no longer can apply the principle of Ein Shvuah Chal Al Shvuah, because now the Shvuah not to eat Nevela is a relevant Shvuah. Now you may say, well, what difference does it make? In any event, V'chai Bohem, V'lo Shiyomus Bohem is going to override any Iser, whether it's Iser Nevela or whether it's Iser Shvuah. In both cases, even if I combine the two powers together and I have a double whammy, nevertheless, Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kol HaTorah Kula. But the answer is going to be that since we want to cut down our violations as much as we can, therefore somebody might say, well, and this is going to be the Prima Gadim's approach, let's take advantage of what's called Hataras HaShvuah. Let's be Matir the Shvuah with Hataras Chacham, so that when the Chole eats the Nevela, alright, he has to violate the Issa Nevela, but why should he violate the Issa Shvuah to boot? And the Shach comes along, which you'll see here on line 4 on the left side, in Yerodeah Simon Reish Lamed Ches, and he says that there's no point, there's nothing necessitating going through the process of Hatorah Shvuoso. Says the Shach, his Shvuah, Shalo Yochal Nevela, is totally meaningless. It's not binding at all, and therefore it doesn't need Hatorah. In other words, the Shach is implementing what we call nullification, Akira. He's claiming that the Shvuah never got off the ground, that from the outset, the Shvuah was not Chal, and it cannot be Chal at any time in the future. Unless, again, you take the Shvuah. I mean, again, if a Chole would take a Shvuah that he won't eat Nevela, that's a different story. But when he took the Shvuah, he was not a Chole, there was no Sakana, and therefore the Shvuah was a Shvuah and a Shvuah, and it's not Chal. Comes along the Prima Gadim, he says, no, I don't agree with the Shach. In my humble opinion, says the Prima Gadim, he's going to need Hatar on that Shvuah. Because the halacha of Ein Shvuah Chal Al Shvuah is not a nullification, it's not an Akira. It doesn't mean that the Shvuah never got off the ground, but what it rather means is that the Shvuah is in temporary suspension. It's somewhere floating through the air in space. It cannot be Chal now, there's no way of being Mekayim the Shvuah, but nevertheless, the Shvuah is there. It's waiting, it's lurking in the shadows for the first opportune moment to jump out and be Chal. When is that moment opportune? When we remove the original Shvuah by being Matir the original Shvuah, now the second Shvuah can be Chal. So for example, if I were to ask you the following question, supposing a person took a Shvuah that he won't eat, chocolate, and then he takes another Shvuah that he won't eat chocolate. Is Ein Shvuah Chal Al Shvuah? What happens if he was Matir the first Shvuah? Would the second Shvuah now pounce on him, jump out of the shadows and be Chal, such that now the second Shvuah that he took is binding? And the answer is, it depends on the Shach and the Prima Gadim. According to the Shach, the halach of Ein Shvuah Chal Al Shvuah completely nullifies and undermines that Shvuah. So the second Shvuah never got off the ground. It was never Chal. According to the Prima Gadim, on the other hand, the Shvuah was Chal. There's no halacha here of nullification of Akira. The original Shvuah is there, as we said before, it's waiting to be Tofes. And it'll be Chal immediately when the first Shvuah is removed. And if you'll take a look on your Maromakomos pages.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
In that case, ein shvur chal al shvur, that applies to any shvur, or does that only apply in a case where you make a shvur against the oraisa? Like in your case with chocolate, it applies to both.
Right, even if you take a shvur. Even if you take a shvuah on something mundane and secular, that's not a mitzvah, if you reiterate the shvuah again, then we apply the principle of ein shvuah chal al shvuah. The second shvuah, since it doesn't add anything, it's an absolute identical repetition of the first shvuah, is not chal. Again, when I say it's not chal, that would be an appropriate formulation according to the shach. The Prima Gadol would stand up and say, wait a minute, Rabbi, that's not so true. You're not being accurate. It really is chal. Well, it's not chal, lemaisa, but it's there. It exists. And basically, this kind of derech alimud, which I want to prove to you tonight, well, today in your part of the world, tonight in mine, that it is very relevant, and it is a key to open up so many sugyas and shas. This really expresses the difference between what we call a maisa and a chalos. All of halacha, whether it's nezikin, whether it's kinyanim, whether it's mitzvos, whether it's ownership rights, everything revolves around the difference between a maisa and a chalosa maisa, meaning the act itself and the result or the implication of the maisa. In this case, what the shach is claiming is that even as a maisa shvua, if that maisa shvua in its moment, when you took the oath, could not generate a chalos shvua, then even the maisa shvua itself is completely null and void. The Prima Gadim doesn't see it that way. The Prima Gadim thinks that if ein shvua chal al shvua, the second shvua is in a temporary blockage situation. It's in suspended animation. The maisa shvua itself is still valid. Again, we have to suspend the chalos shvua, but that's only as long as the first shvua is valid. Once we remove the first shvua, then the second shvua, by virtue of the maisa shvua, could now become effective and it's tofes. I just want to take a moment to... I think Gershon is here with us. I don't see him. If he hears me, I'd love him to say hello. That's you, Gary?
I'm here.
Wow. Okay. If you have a camera, I'd love to say hello to you visually. But hopefully you hear me and you see me.
If I was in front of my computer, I would.
Okay, great. So you're not at your computer.
I'm just on the phone at the moment.
Okay, great.
Next time for sure.
As long as you can hear me on the phone, that's great. Okay, let's move on. Hanan, just excuse me for one split second. Hello? No, she'll be in about 1 hour. Yeah, thank you, sir. Okay, I apologize for that. Are we with us? Okay. Rebbe Hanan, who was, as you know, one of the great Rosh Yeshiva back in Litha before the war, who was killed by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. Rebbe Chanan, in his Kovetz Ha'aros, which is a sefer dedicated to analyze Masechta Yevamos, he wants to know, what does it mean when we say, Yesh koch b'yad chachomim, lakar dovim in HaTorah b'shei v'altase? The Gemara qualifies that the chachomim are only authorized to block a mitzvah shel Torah, but not to allow you to violate bikum vaaseh, the law of the Torah. And Rabbi Chana wants to analyze what's the difference between the two. Why is it that only b'shei v'alta said the Chachamim could tell you don't take a lulav on Shabbos, but they can't tell you to eat nevela? That they can't do. That's already kum vaaseh. So Rabbi Chanan offers two approaches. The first approach, perhaps, is the simplest one. It's very technical, but it's very simple. And that is that to violate an avera, bikum vaaseh, actively, to eat nevela, for example, is much more chamur, it's much more strict and stringent than shei v'al taaseh. Meaning, if I didn't fulfill the mitzvah of lulav, that's bad enough. But it's a lot worse to stand up actively and destroy an alosase. And we find this very often, that the halacha distinguishes between non-fulfillment in a passive state and actively violating something, bikum vaseh. And so, for example, we find that the halacha with regard to violating an avera is very, very strict. And the Chachamim don't have the power, says Rav Elchanan, to tell you to violate an avera. Again, we're not talking about pikuach nefesh now. But they can tell you to be mevatel an essay, non-fulfillment of an essay, which means b'shevi al tase. That's one way of understanding the Gemara. Chachamim were invested with a certain power and a certain authority, but it has its limits. And they can't step over that limit. The limit is shevi al tase, but not kumvase. They can't tell you to violate an isur. I don't know if any of you have ever read the Sefer HaTanya of the Baal HaTanya. It's one of the most important, if not the most important, works on Chassidus. And I don't want to mix two different domains of Torah, but the Baal HaTanya has a tremendous insight into the difference between not fulfilling a mitzvah saseh. Let's say the commander-in-chief, the king, asks you to do something and you don't do it, and violating a lo saseh when he commands you not to do something and you do it. And I mean, I won't go into his whole presentation, and he uses a metaphor. He says that if you violate an iser, a prohibition of the king, it's like taking the king's head and dumping it into the dirt. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing. So again, that's one approach of Rav Elchanan. The Chachamim were given the authority only until that point. Shevi al tase, but not kumvase. However, Rav Elchanan comes up with another approach. He says the difference between shevi al tase, where the Chachamim have the authority, and kumvase, where they don't, has nothing to do with the Chumras HaAveira. It's not at all engendered by the severity of the crime, so to speak. But rather, shevi al tase and kumvase are equal in the eyes of the law. But the problem is that when the Chachamim tell you not to fulfill your mitzvah, they are in a sense contradicted by the Torah that says to fulfill the mitzvah. And you as the third party, sort of like you're being pulled in two different directions. You know, the Torah is telling you yes, and the Chachamim are saying no. And what should you do in such a case? What does a person do when he's in a conflict situation and it's either or? I'll give you an example. Let's say a physician would have to kill someone in order to save someone. And there's no way that morally or ethically he can determine whose life is worth more than the other. This is what the Gemara calls the Sanhedrin, my chazis. You know, who told you that Reuven's blood is redder than Shimon's? So what should you do in such a case? So Rav Elchanan says, before we get to Rav Elchanan, sorry, let's backtrack to Rav Chaim, because I want to give you that as a mashal. Rav Chaim says, this is the first Rav Chaim in his Sefer on the Rambam, says Rav Chaim, shevi al tase. Don't do anything. You don't have the right to actively choose one life over the other. And therefore, the Brisa is very famous. The Goyim surround the city and they say, give us one Jew, and if not, we'll kill a bunch of Jews. You have no right to choose one Jew or the other. Shevi al tase. So from Reb Chaim's perspective, when you have to be passive, which might lead to the death of someone, but it's going to save someone else's life, because otherwise you'd have to kill him. So in such a case, basically, Reb Chaim is saying whether you do it actively or passively is irrelevant as far as the Chumras HaYisur is concerned. This doesn't reflect on the severity of the crime. What it reflects upon is the fact that you can't make this decision. You're in a teku situation. So let it stand. That's called Shevi Al Tase. Reb Elchanan, without quoting the Reb Chaim, employs the same kind of logic and the same mechanics here in the case of Yesh Koch Biad Chachamim. The Chachamim are telling you not to do the mitzvah. The Torah is saying, do the mitzvah. You are forced by this conflict in a situation of a seesaw between two equal forces. Because the Torah authorized the Chachamim under the mitzvah of Asisa Kachal Asher Yerucha, you're bound to the Chachamim, you're bound to the Torah. So what should you do? Says Rav Elchanan, do nothing. Shevi al tase. That's called Yesh Koch Biyad Chachamim. Lakar Dover Min HaTorah B'Shevi al tase. What a beautiful original creation of Rav Elchanan. Basically, Rabosai, What Rabbi Elchanan is vacillating about is our hakira. If you hold like the first approach of Rabbi Elchanan, it means that the Chachamim have the power to completely undermine a mitzvah saseh and force you into a shevi al tasev situation. Don't take the lulav on Shabbos. What the Chachamim therefore are doing is they are completely undermining that mitzvah of taking a lulav. And therefore it's gone. But they cannot tell you to violate an aver, because that's already more chamor. They can remove a chiyuv. They can completely null and void an obligation, and that obligation is batal and mevushal, there's no chiyuv at all. But what they cannot do is tell you to violate an iser. That's already too chomer. That goes beyond the pale of the authority of the chacham. That means that Rabbi Chanan in his first approach is applying the logic, the mechanics of nullification of akira. Chachamim have the power to be oker a mitzvah, completely undermine it. It's null and void, but they cannot null and void an isur, a lav in the Torah. But if we take the second approach of Reb Chaim, he's applying the second logic. There's no nullification. The Chachamim are not undermining, they're not undermining the mitzvah. You have a mitzvah of ulakachtem lachem biyom harishon, to take the lulav. You also have a mitzvah to listen to the chacham who say don't take the lulav. So now you're stuck, according to Rabbi Chanan's second approach, with two conflicting obligations. One is the obligation to fulfill the Torah law. The other is the obligation to fulfill the Rabbanan's requirement. Observe the Shabbos and don't toy with a lulav on Shabbos. You never know whether you bring it from one rishus to the other. So what should you do in such a situation? The answer is, shevi al tasa, do nothing. But in the second approach, that's what I want to emphasize, what we're looking at is instead of a nullification, a temporary suspension. The Chacham is saying, suspend the mitzvah saseh. The Torah is saying, fulfill the mitzvah saseh. You're in a bind, you're in a conflict situation, shevi al taseh, do nothing. And basically, Rabbi Chanan takes this a step further, and he applies it to the case of the mitzvah of re'iyas ponim. And this you'll see on the bottom of your page, moving over to the next page. Let's say, for example, there's a mitzvah to bring a carbon on the regel and to bring it through the azara to the mizbeach. And there's also at the same time a prohibition not to show up in the azara rekam without a carbon. That's a lav. What would be, says Rav Elchanan, in a case where the Chachamim would say, you don't have to bring the carbon, which offhand is shevi al tasa. So the Chacham have the authority to exempt you from your obligation of bringing a carbon. Would you be allowed to enter into the azara? Would that be a violation of lo yiro panai reikam, because you went into the azara reikam? So Rav Elchanan says it all depends if you have a chiyuv carbon. Reikam means don't walk into the azara naked of your carbon, you know, without fulfilling your obligation. But if the Chachamim would be oker the chiyuv, and they would say to you, you don't have any obligation to bring the carbon, then your coming into the azara is not called reikam. You're not violating the isur reikam. Says Rav Elchanan, it depends. If the Chachamim are being oker the chiyuv, there's no chiyuv whatsoever, it's null and void, fine. But if the Chacham are not doing so, they're just telling you not to fulfill your chiyuv, but they accept the chiyuv, then to actively enter into the Azara Bekum Vaaseh without a carbon would constitute a violation of Lo Yiro upon Ireka. And now we get to the case of Kilayim Betzitzis. This is the second paragraph on page Kuf Nun Beis. You know that the Torah allows you to wear kilayim betzitzis, which means that if I have a beged that's made of pishtan, it's made of linen, I'm allowed and even obligated to put tzitzis if it's a four-cornered garment on all the four corners. Tzitzis is made of tzemer, is made of wool. When I tie the woolen strings to the beged of pishtan, I have created a situation of kilayim. But the Torah says, Gedilim ta'asalecha, lo silva shatnez, that even though you are wearing shatnez, you're still allowed and even obligated to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. That's called kilayim b'tzitzis. In other words, the mitzvah of tzitzis completely overrides the iser kilayim. And here we have a fascinating machlokas in Hilchas Tzitzis, which is Arachayim Siman Lamed Beis. What happens if an individual, Bizman Azeh, wants to wear a four-cornered linen garment? Again, according to the Torah law, he's obligated to put on tzitzis. And forget about kilayim, because the Torah was matir kilayim but tzitzis. Tzitzis is dochad iser kilayim. The Rabbanan said, don't do it. The Rabbanan were afraid that if we allow you to put tzemer of tzitzis, chutei tzitzis of tzemer on a beged shel pishtan, at the end of the day you're going to violate kilayim. You know why? Because you're going to wear it at night. Or maybe you'll wear it even if you're not chayav in the midst of tzitzis, when there aren't exactly four corners or whatever it is. So the Chachamim instituted a gzerah, a takana, in which they formulated the following halacha: don't put tzitzis on a beged shel pishtan. Good. What happens if a person went ahead against the Chachamim? We'll give him patch for violating the Chachamim's rule, but he went ahead and he wore kilayim b'tzitzis. He put tzitzis shel tzemer and he tied it down to his beged shel pishtan. Would he be in violation of the Issur Kilayim? Well, wait a minute. The Torah says that the mitzvah of tzitzis is doche kilayim. But here in this case, the Chachamim told him not to wear tzitzis and not to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. Is there a mitzvah here that could be doche the Issur Kilayim? Can we give malchus for wearing this beged because he doesn't have a mitzvah of tzitzis? Chachamim already removed that mitzvah of tzitzis, and therefore there's no mitzvah to be doche the Issur Kilayim. So we left with a situation in which he violated the Issur Kilayim. And once again, it comes back to our question. If the Chacham are telling you that, you know what, there's a mitzvah of tzitzis, but don't fulfill it because we're worried about the long-term repercussions and you're going to take it in the wrong direction. That's one thing. So the Chacham never uprooted, they never nullified the mitzvah of tzitzis. That mitzvah of tzitzis is a chiyuv, which, as we said before, is suspended in midair. What should I say? It's like the Shah, it's like the Prima Gadim's understanding of a shvuah on a shvuah. The shvuah is there just waiting for its moment to be activated. Here too, there's a mitzvah of tzitzis. The Chacham told you don't fulfill it in this case. Wear the beged without tzitzis. He went ahead and he wore it with tzitzis. Now he has a kilayim situation. He fulfilled the mitzvah of tzitzis. The Chachamim never nullified or uprooted the mitzvah of tzitzis. Or no. Yesh koch biyad Chachamim goes even a step further. With regard to shev v'altes, the Chachamim were given carte blanche, absolute control and ability to completely nullify the mitzvah. And therefore, when he puts these tzitzis on a beged shel kilayim, he violates kilayim because there's no mitzvah of tzitzis to doche, to uproot and vitiate the los asev kilayim. And all this you'll see on the bottom right corner. Maybe we'll read a few of the words inside, because I always like this to be a learning chavrusa experience. He writes, Al yidei akiras chachomim nekra mitzvah min haTorah. If that's the case, if the Chacham go as far as Akira to completely nullify the mitzvah, us, in such a case, talis hatalis p'turim in atzitzis. This talis is completely alleviated of the mitzvah of tzitzis, even though it has all the Torah requirements to engender the mitzvah of tzitzis, the Rabbanan uprooted it. Lachain, and therefore, kishalovesh kilayim babegin, lokiyim mitzvah tzitzis. Because the Chachamim completely nullified the mitzvah of tzitzis. The ein shom dechiyah, and there's no power of a mitzvah to be doche the iser kilayim. However, if you skip a little bit forward, he says, Aval yesh sovrim shemitzvah tzitzis mebukomo medes, v'yim lavash kilayim b'tzitzis yizkayim v'zeh mitzvah tzitzis, v'yim kan malkus do'oraisa v'vadai. He says that although he shouldn't have done such a thing and wore this beged of pishon with tzitzis of tzemer, but nevertheless, he still fulfills the mitzvah of tzitzis, and therefore he doesn't violate the law of kilayim. That's all here on the bottom right, a summary, an overview of what Rabbi Chanan has to say. And now, my friends, we want to apply this to a classical sugya which appears over and over again throughout Shas, and that's called ones, which means mitigating circumstances, beyond my control. When the Torah says, ones rachmona patri, which means that in a certain situation, you're in a dangerous situation, for example, you're potter from the mitzvah. So, for example, we have a disease, unfortunately, a blood disease called hemophilia. So what happens if two children in the same family, Rachmana Litzlan, died as a result of Mila? The third child will not be subject to Bris Mila. Today, with modern science, we can already know beforehand whether this genetic and deadly disease is in a family or not. But in the days of Chazal, there weren't blood tests that could determine, you know, they didn't have Darius Sharim, you know, genetic testing. And it's only after Mesu Echav Machmas HaMila that we establish that the next child in line will not be subject to Mila. There will be no Bris Mila done because of the Pikuach Nefesh involved. So, if you ask me, what's the status of this third child who doesn't have a Bris Mila? Did he violate the mitzvah of Mila? For sure not. He's anus. You know, there are circumstances beyond his control. It's pikuach nefesh. He cannot possibly implement the mitzvah of Mila. But now let's ask, what's the nature of onus? How do we define onus? Is onus nullification or is onus temporary blockage? How do we view it? Do we say that since this person cannot undergo Mila by virtue of the danger, the health danger to his life, therefore he's not obligated in the mitzvah of Mila? Forget it. We completely null and void at the mitzvah. It's nekar mimkoma. There was never a chiyuv. As far as he's concerned, he was born without a chiyuv Mila. If they ever ask you a quiz question, you know, they wake you up in the middle of a sleep and they say to you, well, give me a case of somebody who's not chayif in the mitzvah of Mila. And the answer is, mesu och echov machmas ha-mila. He's honest. You can't give him a Mila. He's not chayif in Mila. The mitzvah of Mila, he's not included in the parsha of Mila. That's one way of saying it. The other way of saying it is, no, he's obligated in the mitzvah of Mila. We have a temporary situation here. What we have is not a nullification or uprooting the mitzvah, but rather we have a suspension of the mitzvah of Mila. Meaning, right now in his present situation, because of mitigating circumstances beyond his control, he cannot possibly implement the mitzvah. The mitzvah is there. The chiyuv is not removed. And I heard once from my Rebbe, the Rav Zichron Levracha, that there is a machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam that might be very relevant to this question. In Masechta Yevamos, the Gemara wants to know whether the status of Arel, which means that someone without Mila is not allowed to eat from Kodshim, he's not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash, and even the father of an Arel is excluded from Karban Pesach. Does that status of Arel apply in the case of Mesu Echav Machmas HaMila? Would you call him an Arel? Well, Arel means someone who did not fulfill his mitzvah of Mila. But in the case of Mesu Echav Machmas HaMila, I'm not sure if you can actually say he did not fulfill his mitzvah of Mila. On the contrary, maybe he has no mitzvah of Mila. The mitzvah of Mila was completely nulled and voided from the get-go. And if you'll take a look here on page Kuf Nun Gimel, which should be the fourth page in your package, on the second paragraph in Nira, he says that there's machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, between the Zayda and the Einikol, about the case of Mesu Echav Machmas Mila. Is he considered an Arel? Is he enjoined from doing the Avoda, from eating Kodshim, eating the Karban Pesach? Rashi says that he's not an Arel. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, I'm sorry, Rashi says he's an Arel. Look at him, he's an Arel. I mean, he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Mila. And Rabbeinu Tam says that since he's anus, therefore he doesn't have a chiyuv of Mila. And therefore he's not considered an Arel at all. You should underline the last four words in that paragraph. That really captures the essence of Rabbeinu Tam Shita lo chashiv Ariel klal, he's not considered an Ariel at all. In other words, Rabbeinu Tam maintains that there is no chiyuv of Mila in the case of an ones, and therefore we apply the logic of nullification. The chiyuv, the mitzvah of Mila, the obligation of Mila is completely null and void. There's no Ariel then. Ariel is the flip side of an obligation that's non-fulfilled. Non-compliance with the obligation of Mila engenders Arlos. Says Rashi, okay, mitigating circumstances beyond his control, but tachlis, bottom line, he did not fulfill his mitzvah of Mila. And Rabbeinu Tam says, wait a minute, Zeidah, there is no mitzvah of Mila in this case. It's really our Hakira all over again. And this brings us to the next sugya. I'm just going to take a minute. Okay, now I can see the page I'm looking at here. There's a question about what's called Oskim B'tzarchei Tzibur. For example, let's say there's a group of Chachamim, or one individual Chacham, who's on his way to be Podesh Shvuyim. Non-Jews were taken into captivity. We had it just recently, but we didn't have the option of redeeming them, unfortunately. And they're called Oskim B'tzarchei Tzibur. There are many other examples of Oskim B'tzarchei Tzibur. And the Gemara establishes in Masech the Brachas that Oskim B'tzarchei Tzibur are potter min atfilah. They don't have to look for a minyan and start davening. They have to be totally, exclusively dedicated to the B'tzarchei Tzibur. Now, the law is, as you and I know, that if a person misses an onas tefillah, even if he was a shogeg, he has to daven in the next onah a tefillas tashlum. Meaning anyone who's obligated in tefillah and he does not fulfill his obligation, even if he didn't do it b'mezid, it wasn't deliberate, nevertheless, he's got to daven a tefillas Tashlum. So the first case that I want to discuss with you, and then we'll get to the case of Oskim B'tzarchei Tzibur, is the case of an Onen. Rachmana Litzlan, if somebody loses one of his close relatives, then up until the moment of burial, he's exempt from all mitzvahs. Not only is he alleviated from the obligation of tefillah of davening, he's not even allowed to daven. And in such a case, after burial, is he obligated to offer a tefillas tashlumen? So say, for example, he missed Shacharis that morning, he was an onen. The burial took place at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He comes to the base Ovel. It's still time for Mincha, so he davens Mincha. He's going to be the Shliach Tzibur for Mincha in the base Ovel. Should he daven a second Shmone Esrei to make up, to replace the Shmone Esrei that he missed Shacharis time? And the answer to that question, which is in Or HaChaim, Siman Kuf Ches, is that Misha Meslo Mes is Lo Yispalel V'Ein Tzarech Lispal Shtayim Kedei Lahashlim Tfilas Ha'erev. There's no obligation to pray a replacement prayer, a Tashlumin Tfilah, for the one that he missed. So that what we see here is a very interesting breakthrough. Why is Onen different than another person who couldn't daven for whatever reason? In the case of someone who couldn't daven, let's say, for example, his body wasn't prepared, his mind wasn't prepared, he will daven at Tefillas Tashlumen. Not as a punishment, but it's an opportunity to make up for the chiv that he didn't fulfill in the previous onah. But in the case of an onen who's not allowed to daven, the Torah completely uproots and undermines the chiyuv. This is called akira. But here's one case where we have an akira that's crystal clear. When are you chayv at tefillas tashlumin? When you had a chovas tefillah. The previous owner, you had a chovas tefillah. Now in this owner, you have to double up your tefillah. Make up for the one. But if you didn't have a chovas tefillah, take for example the case of a guy who's misgayer. So the gayers took place at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we take the ger and we invite him to daven mincha. But he doesn't have to replace chakras because at that point he was a non-Jew. He had no chiyuv of tefillah. And in a certain sense, the case of an onen is analogous to the case of someone who is not Jewish. He had no chiyuv of tefillah. The onen is completely alleviated from the chovas tefillah. But what happens in the case of oskim v'tzarchei tzibur? You see, in oskim v'tzarchei tzibur, the language of the Gemara is pturim ilis palel. In other words, to the extent in which we're worried about their juggling or getting sidetracked by the mitzvah of tefillah to such an extent that they won't give it their absolute all to be osek b'tzarchei tzibur. In other words, we do a triage here in which oskim b'tzarchei tzibur is more important. It trumps the mitzvah of tefillah. But on the other hand, that might be a din in the kiyum ha-tefillah, not in the chiyuv tefillah, meaning oskim b'tzarchei tzibur are chayav in tefillah just like you and I. There's no new status change. You know, we transform the person into a guy or an onen who has certain dinim by virtue of the chal shem gavra. He is in a halachic state in which there's no obligation of tefillah and therefore there's no tashlumin. Not so in the case of oskim b'tzarchei tzibur. But the Taz doesn't really address this question head on. The Drisha addresses the question, or Chaim Siman Kuf Ches, and he says, "Hu adin lemisasek b'tzarchei tzibur kayotzi bo shepotem ispalel u'mitocha asek b'tzarchei tzibur over zman shalos tefila ein tzarech lashlima." In other words, the Drisha is willing to make an absolute equation, an analogy between the case of an onen and the case of someone who's osek b'tzarchei tzibur. In both situations, there is no chovas tefillah, and therefore it's not a case of tashlumin. Tashlumin means there was a chovas tefillah, an obligation that wasn't discharged. Here there was no obligation at all. And he quotes the Tur in Siman Tzadi Gimel, and he says that just like in the case of an onen, ain't tzarich lashlim of isman tefilas achvel is palos shtei tefilas achas l'tashlumin. Kevan shegibizman haya osek haya potim in a tefilu is completely potik moba avelus mali ones umali avelus. He spells it out for you, the Drisha. He says there's no difference between ones and avelus. In both cases, the Torah says you're not chayev. Comes along the Taz. And he says, "V'toma ani im yotza dvarim elu mipios tzadik." I have doubts if it was ever said. You know, he's playing here on words, but he's like saying, "The manuscript. There was somebody toyed with. He couldn't have said such a thing." He says, "Da kol shu ones, anyone who's onus mikri, he's considered potum in tefillah. In other words, he has a blockage. He cannot implement this tefillah. He's in a situation of onus." But he's not in a situation where ain't no chayav l'spal klal. He's chayav l'spal. The chiyuv hovers over him. And if there'll be a moment of time in which he can take a break from being osek b'tzarchei tzibur, then immediately he would be compelled, he would be obligated to daven if it would still be within that onas tefillah. He says that onas is not enough to undermine, to nullify the chiyuv mitzvah. And therefore, there's a chiyuv tashlumin in this case. So whereas an onen, according to everyone, whether it's the Drisha or the Taz, clearly is potter from a tefillah's tashlumin, he's not chayav in tefillah to begin with. However, in the case of oskim b'tzarchei tzibur, we have here a fundamental machlokes between the Drisha and the Taz. The Drisha understands that in the case of oskim b'tzarchei tzibur, there's no chovas gavra of tefillah at all. In other words, the Asek B'tzarchei Tzibur nullifies and uproots the Chovas Tefillah, and therefore forget about Tashlumin because we're in the same exact situation as we were in the case of an Onen. Mali Onen and Mali Onus. Comes along the Taz and he says no. Ones is fundamentally different. Ones is a temporary blockage. So again, whether an Oskim B'tzarchei Tzibur is called a Gavra Lav bar chiyuvah, meaning is the problem in the kiyuvah mitzvah, is the problem in the chiyuvah mitzvah, that's a machlokas achronim, and the nafkamina is going to be whether he's chayiv in tefillas tashlum. I want to add one last piece to this discussion, and then we'll call it a day, but we're about halfway through. Maybe if you're interested, we'll do part two to this. And that is, there's a discussion in the Rishonim about the case of someone who couldn't bring the Korban Pesach because he was Tomei or Bederek Rechoka. This is on the bottom left of Kuf Nun Gimel, if you're following in the text. He was Tomei, and therefore he cannot bring the Korban Pesach. He was Derech Rechoka, he was far away. Those two cases are formulated by the Torah as a twin set. You know, they always go together. And then there's a case of Ones. Ones means that there were circumstances beyond his control, and therefore he couldn't possibly bring the Korban Pesach. Let's say he was laid up Nebuch in bed, he was in a hospital with, you know, with two casts, one on each foot. He couldn't get out of his bed to bring the Korban Pesach. So the question is, how do we look at Ones in comparison to Tomei V'Derech Rechoka? The halach of Tomei V'Derech Rechoka is that he's exempt from Pesach Rishon on the 14th of Nisan, but he becomes obligated in Pesach Sheni on the 14th of Iyar. He will not be Chayv Kares because now he's in a situation where he has the opportunity to bring the Karbon on Pesach Sheni. However, according to an entire school of Rishonim, in the case of an Ones who couldn't possibly bring the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, meaning Pesach Rishon, in such a case, his obligation in with regard to Pesach Sheni is totally different. Okay, so let's go over the two shitas. One shita equates Ones with Tomei and Bederech Rechoka, and the other shita differentiates between the two. Again, Tomei and Derech Rechoka go together, and the question is whether Ones should also be equated. We're going to look now at the shita of Rambam. The Rambam is in the ninth parak of Psachim in his Pirush on the Mishnah, and the Rambam says that Kshohaya Tomei or Bederech Rechoka Pesach Rishon, he's now obligated by Torah law and Pesach Sheni. Says the Rambam, we know that the violation, or shall we say the non-fulfillment of the mitzvah Korban Pesach, it's one of the two mitzvahs that are very unique and very special, it incurs a chiyuv kares. What happens in this case? He was a Tomei v'derech Rechoka, and therefore he couldn't possibly have brought the Korban Rishon. The Torah says he's part of the Korban Rishon. Now he becomes Chayv and Korban Sheni. What happens if he does not fulfill his obligation to bring the Korban Sheni? Well, I would have said the Korban Sheni replaces the Korban Rishon. It's just like the Korban Rishon, if you don't comply, it engenders a Chi of Kares. The same logic should apply to the Korban Pesach Sheni. If he didn't bring the Pesach Sheni, which he's clearly obligated in, then he should be Chayv Kares. Says the Rambam, Nei. That's not so. He says, Kevan sheniftar mi Pesach Rishon, shenemar bo kares. Where does the Torah formulate the chiyuv kares? That's only in the context of Pesach Rishon. He was not obligated in the mitzvah of Pesach Rishon. Therefore, he's nidchel Pesach Sheni, but Pesach Sheni is an independent chiyuv, shelo nemar bo loshen kares. We don't find that the Torah will obligate you in the punishment of kares for the violation of Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is a mitzvah like any other mitzvah, but it doesn't have the same power as Pesach Rishon. Oh, now we get back to the case of Ones. He was in Tomei. He was in Bederech Rechoka. There were circumstances beyond his control, and he couldn't bring the Korban Pesach Rishon. Oh, Charney just came in. Charney, if you want to say hello to Gil Stein down in Boca, or Ruby Yarmish in Boston, or Yair, who's in Malé Adumim.
Hi, guys. Okay. Malé Adumim?
Yeah.
What's he doing there?
And Chaim Besset is somewhere here, but I can't see him. I don't know, maybe he doesn't have his camera with him. Okay. So, what do we have now? We have the case of Anus, and with this we'll wrap it up. The case of Anus. And in such a case, would he be Chayav Kares if he doesn't bring Pesach Sheni? And there's a whole school of Rishonim who say that now he's Chayav Kares if he doesn't comply with Pesach Sheni. Because Pesach Sheni is his only opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. Meaning the mitzvah of Karban Pesach, when you don't comply and you don't fulfill it, engenders a Chayav Kares. If you are potter from Pesach Rishon, now Pesach Sheni appears or is engendered as a separate independent mitzvah. And the Rambam points out very well that that mitzvah does not incur a Chayav Kares. But if you were obligated in Pesach Rishon, but you were in a situation of anus, you couldn't possibly fulfill that mitzvah, now your only opportunity to avoid, protect yourself against the Chayav Kares of Pesach Rishon is by bringing the Pesach Sheni. If he deliberately doesn't bring the Pesach Sheni, then he's Chayav Kares. That's if we assume, like those Rishonim, that Ones is a temporary blockage. The chiyuv is there. It doesn't nullify or undermine the chiyuv. Other Rishonim say that Onus is exactly like Tomei B'derech Rechoka. He was completely alleviated and exempt from the mitzvah of Karban Pesach because of Onus. There was no chiyuv. The chiyuv was nullified. And now Pesach Sheni emerges as a separate independent mitzvah. We apply the rule of the Rambam as the Rambam formulates it in Tomei B'derech Rechoka. Namely, that he's not Chayav Kares for violating the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. When the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni is his last opportunity to fulfill his Chiyuv Karban Pesach, then basically he's Chayav for Karban Pesach Kares, not because of Pesach Sheni, but because of Pesach Rishon. Pesach Sheni is the opportunity to save himself from Kares, and he never availed himself of that possibility, so therefore he's Chayav Kares. In a word, we come back to our original Chakira, what's the status of Ones? Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. And I really appreciate it. I'm very excited that you came to the Shia. And let me know if you want to continue in this vein or in a different kind of Shia. And if anybody wants to ask questions, now is an excellent time to ask, either by chat or by... I didn't turn off anyone's microphone here, so I can theoretically hear any of you. I see that Chaim Besson turned off his microphone. Chaim, are you there? Chaim Besson, are you there? Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
You're here, Chaim. Okay, great. Shalom Aleichem. I don't see you, but I hear you. So that's good enough. And who's calling user number two? We don't know who that is, do we? Okay, there's some anonymous person here. Hopefully he's not from the KGB. I'm just kidding. Okay, any last questions before we convene? Before we end the meeting, I mean. Okay, Shkoyach. Thank you, everybody. And let me know when's a convenient time, when you're available for the next shiur, what kind of shiur you'd like, and if you enjoyed the shiur, and if you know of any way of sending out the word, I don't know if you're a local shul bulletin, I can send you a nusach by email of a little bit of a, I don't want to call it advertisement because this has nothing to do with money, Baruch Hashem, it's pure Torah Lishma, but to get the word out that people should email me if they want to be on the invite list and let me know when they're available. So if you can possibly project that in your community or wherever you are, or you can, you know, send it around through your email people, or anyone who's on your email or Facebook or whatever they have now, social media, then just let me know and I'll send you a little bit of a blurb that invites people, any people, men, women, and children, to join us for Shiur. Kol Tov, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to see you. Wow. Char?
Yesterday I was ready to throw things out. And now I'm back up on it, you know? Yeah, your man is Ruby Yarmish. Ruby is working at a hospital in Boston.
What does he do?
What does he do? He told me what he does, and the minute that we had before I started the deal, what does he do? And kind of investigate to the shiur, and I knew shooting was at the shiur, but I couldn't see him. He said he was nowhere near the computer, so he couldn't turn on, you know.
Oh.
In other words, I could have been looking into the faces of five different people. Instead, I was looking at Gilstein, Ruby Yarmish, and Yair Max. Simultaneously, I could have been looking at two more people. Kind. That's in the Gary Gilstein.
What happens if you get 20 people, 50 people?
Well, no, I'm only paying $24 a month, so I can get up to 80. Many of these lawyers says I invite 20 people. But I know that if you invite 20 people, you're lucky to get two.
Got it.
All right, we eat together?
Yeah.
Great.
Boy,
you had a heavy thing. No, tomorrow I only did the Scottish shoe, which is at 3:50.
Oh. Oh, what?
What do they call telecommunications?
Telemarketing.
Telemarketing.
Hi. Is that Yair? Who's calling, Yair? Oh, Daniil, how are you? So awake, well, great to hear your voice.
So Daniil, let me ask you this. Do you have any objection if I continue to invite you? You know, it's... Oh, okay, great. You know, because some people say, flooded with emails, you know, there's a whole etiquette of emails, you know what I mean? But if you don't mind, I'll continue to invite you, and whenever you can come. I just finished the shiur. All right, so do me a favor, if you can, send me an email, you know, and I just finished the shiur right now, and Baruch Hashem, there were five people at the shiur. So I was very excited. I hadn't seen three of the five had hammers, so I was able to see them during the shiur. Well, again, you know, I'm trying different experiments to see which groups are real. So, okay, so now I'll be smarter. I'll put you also on that list. You see, what happened is, yesterday two guys showed up. So I figured maybe Monday is better than Sunday. And it turns out that from two we went up to five. But I'm excited not just because we went up to five, but because three out of the five, I was able to see them really up close, and I haven't seen these guys in years. I mean, I'll give you an example. Ruby Yarmish went through the Maseret before you were born. No, I'm joking. Yeah. But he was there just a while. I haven't seen Ruby Yarmish in a decade. I mean, and Yair Mattis. Yeah, all right, 9 years. Sorry, I'm correct. Yeah, I corrected. I mean, the man tells me he has four children. Can I know him? His oldest has a wonderful name that I remember from his days, in, you know, when we used to be in touch. He's Azaria. He reminded me his 9-year-old is Azaria. But I'll tell you, Yair Manis actually came to Toronto after I left. Meaning, I was in Canada for 2 years, and he came afterwards. And he was at the ship night. And he's here in Israel, so I see that this is a good album. And then, Gil Stein was there. Do you remember Gil Stein? Was he here or not? There are two Steins who learned to be Shiva. Gil is the older one, and he's in Boca. And there he was, crystal clear. I mean, he looked like a 60-year-old. He was shaven, and it was great. I'm totally thrilled. But last night, I was down in the dumps. But it's very difficult. You see, the thing about WebEx is that you have to actively invite someone. And I don't know who to invite, you know, because I don't know how to reach out to people. I don't know if you have any, like, social media or anything, or a shul bulletin or something, I can write you a little blurb or something. So that anyone who wants to, I don't know where to, you know, there's no, like, dumb board for this, you know. So I sent the people on my email list. That's a very limited budget situation. And for the Americans, I'm thinking of offering once a week a shul seaboard. It would be 10:30 at night. So those were real messages. 5:30 to 6:15, and then I go out to Dalton at 6:15 meeting. And that shiur would be a perfect luncheon for Australians, because Australia is 7 hours later. So could you imagine I could have Americans at night and Australians in the afternoon? I mean, the potential is awesome, but... Anyway, Dino, thanks so much for calling. Has some shpacha as well? Great. Wow, I'd like to see a house. I'd love to see it. Which part of Eight Shemesh is it? Yeah. All right, now I remember. Yeah. Okay, the Melmini, call to the science center. Send me a one money note just exactly which you're much invited. He's moving through his This is mine.
Take whatever you want.
No, I want to know what you want for yours. Find it. If it would be here, would it be on the door of the fridge?
No, I think it's on the door. Maybe on the door.
Yeah, no, no, I'm just checking that the door. Without pulling it in such a way that the shor is going to die, you're allowed to do that because the shor is a mazik. In this case, I had to give the guy an ultimatum, of course. You had to give him that much time. That's why I think the lawyer comes in, because the lawyer will tell you what he, you know, I don't think it should cost you too much to ask the lawyer right to let any lawyer, then they can do it for free even. But the same lawyer will probably know exactly how much time he needs to do this stuff. Now, like you say, he's not going to respond to the letter, but then again, you know, you have a small claims court that's about to freeze his assets, you know, so if he decides to ignore such warnings, then he's going to, you know, who he sabach ayur, but goes off, you know, he's going to have to suffer. Well, look, if the Kedemar Mishus HaRabin, it means, oh, you can get rid of that, even though he has rights to that. Here, his Kalim are your Rishus. And again, they're not, I wouldn't say they're physically located in your Rishus, but they are blocking you from protecting your Rishus. So in that sense, he's invading your private Rishus. So I would think with a Kalachomer, if you're allowed to take the law into your own hands to protect yourself, which is going to just be drowned by water, you know, it's like somebody has in his domain the ability to put up a dam and stop the flow of the water that's coming into your rishus, and he refuses to do so. He'll do whatever you have to do, even if it moves, even if it means removing his stuff, dam, and protect the water from damaging your property. Okay, I hope that works out. If I have anything else to add, you know, if I get a chance to speak to Rabbi Fleck about it, I'll give you a buzz. Now, I say, if I have anything else to add, I'll give you a buzz. Okay. All right, hold it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I apologize. I just, you know, it's the time in my life that Mo Camione called me to discuss an issue in his life. Are we eating anything more?
Yeah,
it's I should come back later?
No,
I'm topic here is landlords. Where are we holding the resentment?
Let's keep it down. Come on, they went to a court, they stole a small claims court. Just to get access to the roof. So he's asking me a lot.
Of course, so he's only been sitting in jail.
2 minutes.
Should I go that microphone?
Not an email with just a drawing of how kind of laid it out on the fixture, but
oh, yeah.
I can take care of that.